At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, August 21st, 2022. We are joined here in the fourth week of the post-Vince McMahon era. Chris Gullo's microphone is already rumbling and bumbling. Hello.
Just moved it a little closer. That's all. We're good. We'll be good. It's a beautiful Sunday morning here after it rained. In Buffalo overnight, which is great because my grapes, I didn't talk to you about this, Brandon, my grapes are almost ready.
Ready for what?
To be picked and eaten.
Oh, wow.
I'm growing Concord grapes and Niagara green grapes.
Niagara green grapes.
Yes. And they both are.
Is that a species?
Yeah, that's a type of grape.
What is it in Latin?
No idea. Yeah, so it's a beautiful, beautiful end of the summer here. So we only have a few weeks left in summer in Buffalo, and my grapes are almost ready. I know we have a couple of listeners that want to know about the garden update. So
we were discussing off air a potential business strategy around higher tier. Certainly, garden updates will be a part of that.
Of course,
for all the hardcores out there who are far down the funnel. What do you want to talk about today? What should we talk about?
Yeah, so it's a jam-packed edition. A couple big stories this week. Of course, the Q2 results for WWE are out, and we'll have highlights from the press conference and the results that came out from that, and kind of break down that a little bit further, what that means for business with attendance and Peacock. Apparently, WrestleMania 39 broke a ticket sales record. We'll get into that in more detail. We will discuss the Wall Street Journal finally reporting on the Vince McMahon Donald Trump connection with the $5 million. G1 Climax was a few days ago. A big story, there is no more NXT UK. It's NXT Europe next year, and there was a lot of releases that encompassed that. And we'll talk TV rights too, as the Big Ten got a historic $1 billion deal.
Okay, so firstly, how can people get in on the conversation?
They can actually click the little dollar sign under where they can ask a question and put any dollar amount you see fit. We will ask your questions as they see fit throughout the conversation today.
Okay. So WWE had its Q2 earnings call on Tuesday after much anticipation and waiting about, you know, was WWE going to get Vince McMahon's financial payments in order so they could update the unrecorded payments to make them recorded payments. The funny thing here is that, you know, they said they were going to update going back to 2019. Best that I can tell, they only really updated the 2020, maybe they accounted for some expense. They did account for some expenses in this year, 2022. But basically they took $3 million of profitability off of 2021. So that basically the net income for 2021 was $180.4 million. Now it's only $177.4 million. Not a massive difference, but it's something. I have not seen changes that they made to years prior to that yet, even though they did put out, you know, an amended 10K, an amended 10Q. Anyway, the board's investigation into Vince McMahon's wrongdoing and John Laurinaitis' wrongdoing, and they said they were also going to do an investigation into the company culture. WWE said that is substantially complete. The investigation is substantially complete. What does that mean? I don't know. Are we going to get a filing coming up soon that's going to show us all the documentation of the investigation? I wouldn't count on it. But this is what they said in their 10Q, and they put a similar sentence all throughout their filing. The special committee investigation is substantially complete. Vince McMahon has retired as of July 22nd, as we all know, but he remains a stockholder with controlling interest. I had some questions about, you know, there's comments in here, and Frank Riddick says on the call that Vince McMahon is going to pay for some of the cost, at least some of the cost related to the investigation, which they anticipate costing them as much as $10 million, maybe more, maybe less throughout the rest of the year. It's already cost them, I believe, $1.7 million, something in that area. So I had some questions about whether that means that Vince McMahon is going to use his personal money to pay for an investigation into the use of his personal money that should have been recorded as company money. I'm very confused. And, you know, does this not just further enhance the conflict already inherent when a company investigates its largest shareholders' alleged wrongdoing in a company that not only is he the largest and controlling shareholder of, but also, you know, he's got family members who are major executives in this company, including Stephanie McMahon and Paul Levesque. But anyway, I did ask WWE about whether Vince was, am I understanding that correctly, that Vince is paying for this? I did reach out to WWE. I did not hear a response, though. So anyway, interrupt me if you have anything to add.
I just kind of have one question for, like, so obviously they would report that, right? Like that, hey, report we what? Paid $10 million for this investigation. That would all have to be reported at this point, right?
I mean, it would certainly be recorded in their financial statements. Yes. Whether or not they would make it explicit how much they spent on it, I kind of think they will based on what they've already disclosed, but not guaranteed. You know, I don't know that they would be breaking SEC rules if they didn't. Because we're only talking, I mean, you know, it's like any, maybe it's not, but it could be like any business deal, any transaction that they make. They don't tell us exactly what NBC Universal gives them. They don't tell us exactly what Fox gives them. I can deduce it sometimes because of the way that they disclose certain things, but they don't tell us what exactly how much money they made from the video game. You know, but they tell us what their operating expenses were, which is this big bundle of stuff. But anyway, a bit of a hold on ads and sponsorships, according to Stephanie McMahon. She took a question from Eric Handler of MKM Partners, one of the stock analysts, on the question and answer session on the earnings call. There's a great deal of interest around ads and sponsorships. What are we talking about when we're talking about ads and sponsorships, Chris Gull? Do you have a sense what we're thinking of there in terms of the viewer's experience?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think what we're talking about here is, I mean, it's honestly the crux of that 18 to 34 and 18 to 49, you know, push for that. You want those major sponsors and advertisers that go towards that base. And obviously WWE wants to get as many of those as possible to drive up, you know, profit.
So I think what they're talking about here, they're not talking about like the ads that you see during the commercial breaks for Raw and SmackDown. That's handled by NBC Universal. Yeah. That's handled by Fox. But the on-air sponsorships, this
zombies, replay, the Pizza Huts, the water. The water's the new one now.
Or even the replay sponsored by whatever. For sure. Mike's Hard Lemonade entrance with Shinsuke and Rick Boogs. Rey Mysterio coming out in the beer company's imagery. Anyway. But a bit of a hold, according to Stephanie McMahon, who says, you know, but and by the way, there's a lot of interest from the analysts, I guess, because they're concerned that this area, this is a big area for possible growth in their view, or should be. And remember, part of what Business Insider reported just after Stephanie McMahon took a temporary leave of absence on May 19th, Business Insider reported that according to one insider at WWE, that Stephanie was pushed out, reportedly, by Vince McMahon because of the lack of, you know, good performance as it relates to the sales of these ads and sponsorships. So that's what Business Insider said. Of course, she would come back to WWE sometime not too far from then and become interim CEO and chairwoman, and now she's permanent. But they've said, and she alludes to it here in her comment, that they target $100 million in a year in this ads and sponsorships area. And if I look up how much they're making in media ads and sponsorships in a given year right now, so say in 2021, in that segment, they reported about $72 million. And they think they can make $100 million in revenue in this area. So
is that... Do you know what 2020 looks like? Like, is that like a substantial increase
$65.3 million in 2020.
So she basically wants to do three times what the usual growth is, pretty much.
The growth.
Yeah, because it went from 63 to 71, and she wants 71 to 100. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And apparently UFC, I haven't seen this for myself, but apparently UFC is doing well in this area too. So anyway, her comment here that I, you know, I'm sure they're all practiced very well and not saying things that they don't want to say, but some actual substance here that I found. And maybe she had to say this to allude to maybe a lack of performance in the quarter. Although what did this quarter do? This quarter did 17.9 million, which is in the range of what it's been doing usually. I mean, Q1 had 19.8, Q2 had 17.9. Now the Vince stuff didn't start happening until June 15th. So WrestleMania happens, and none of that would be in advertisers' minds. But anyway, what does she say here that's meaningful? We had a bit of a hold, given the current situation, but a lot of positive momentum behind that, and we are now picking up once again. A bit of a hold, given the current situation. She doesn't say what she's alluding to, but I can't imagine she's alluding to anything else. What would be a current situation?
Well, obviously the Vince McMahon scandal, and I wonder if one of the current holds is Netflix. Because we've seen Netflix this cross advertising.
Yes, but Netflix, I guess it could be because they did the zombie thing. So if you're talking about
what I'm saying.
I'm just thinking, okay, the documentary. But it could be. It could be Netflix being less interested.
Didn't Netflix do the Egg movie too? Wasn't that like a Netflix movie? Probably. The Egg?
Probably. Yeah. Someone in the chat probably knows. That was a Rock movie, right? Was that on Netflix exclusively?
I think it was, yeah.
I think so.
My point is just that I'm just a... You know, speculating on probably one of the big. I mean, we obviously they had an issue with the Vince scandal, so.
And it actually affected business. Now they do say she does say go on to say in the very next sentence that SummerSlam had a 40% year-over-year growth in that area. But you know, I thought that. So this is what they added. They had to update a lot of their risk factors because of the changes in Vince no longer being the CEO of the company, and which made for great clickbait fodder for the aggregators. But one of the things that they do add in here is that although we believe that no significant business has been lost to date in relation to the special committee investigation, etc., although we believe that no significant business has been lost to date, it is possible that a change in the perceptions of our business partners could occur as a result of the investigation. So basically that's saying, you know, maybe business partners aren't as excited to pay us as much money in dealing with us because of the results of the investigation. But no significant business has been lost to date. What does significant mean? Who knows? But here's Stephanie saying we had a bit of a hold. Sounds like business wasn't as great because of Vince being Vince. And we're all sad that he's gone. Some people are. So, that was meaningful. And I thought that the loss of the services of Vince McMahon, according to W's risk factors, could have a material adverse effect on our ability to W's ability to create popular characters and creative storylines, or could otherwise adversely affect W's operations and financial performance. All along, that this language has been in W's risk factors, where they just go through the gambit of things that a stockholder should know. Keep in mind, we've disclosed this to you so that if our stock loses value for you, you don't come at us and say, hey, you didn't warn me. But the services of Vince McMahon have always been purported to be very, very valuable in WWE's risk factors. More on that later. The next day rights. What are the next day rights, Chris Call?
Yeah, so that is what are currently owned by Hulu, and that's Raw and SmackDown to be able to watch it the next day on demand.
Right, so... There's a question again from Eric Handler of MCAM Partners asking whether he says, I'm wondering, since you have negotiations coming up next year for Raw and SmackDown, are you better off waiting on the day two rights, that is the replay rights on Hulu, and make that part of your next Raw and SmackDown TV contract? Nikon takes that question, of course, because it has to do with media negotiations. And he gives a vague response. It's top of mind. Sure. We're discussing and we'll figure it out. So that was an interesting thought. So these Hulu rights are going to expire at the end of the year, I believe. And I think that's what everybody believes, is that these are going to just expire around December, if not the very end of the year, the calendar year. So it would make a lot of sense to me if, you know, you wanted to do, say you wanted to do a deal with Amazon, and if you want to do a deal with a streaming player like Amazon, it would make a lot of sense to be able to offer them the replay of the show, as opposed to, like, I can't imagine, I doubt Raw or SmackDown are going to end up on Amazon or are going to end up primarily or exclusively on a streaming service, to be clear. To be clear. It's probably going to end up, in my view, on traditional TV still. But if it were to end up on a streaming player, I can't imagine that streaming player broadcasting Raw or SmackDown live, and then if you missed it live, you can't watch it on the streaming service. You know?
Yeah. It'd be a combo package, because any other thing offers that.
Right. So maybe it makes sense to deal these things together. And even if WWE doesn't sell to an Amazon, or I highly doubt they're going to sell to Apple TV, but maybe they're going to have a discussion with them. But I highly... It makes a lot more sense if you can offer that together to an Amazon. And what's the advantage of that? If Amazon makes a really strong bid, that could help run up the value of maybe the mostly linear deal that you end up making. Just the more aggressive bids that you can provoke from the media ecosystem, the better that is for WWE.
I want to throw this out there. The NFL has recently launched NFL Plus. And really what it is, it's basically replays of games. That's the crux of it.
And people watch this?
Yeah. Like,
people watch old games.
Like replays of games that happen. I wonder if there isn't a deal that is not super beneficial for them, that maybe, and with it being almost September, we don't have a deal announced, that is kind of interesting. Would they possibly maybe think about a WWE Plus where, hey, you pay $5 a month and you get Raw and SmackDowns on replay and NXT as well?
I think if you asked a WWE executive on the record about that, they would say, oh, yeah, we're considering all options and we're definitely going to figure that out. But I don't think so. Because the impression that I've gotten from what they've done with the network is that, you know, their obviously massaged line is that we're not a tech company. Why would we try to do all this stuff? And let's never mind the fact that all of our consumer metrics stalled in the mid 2010s. But I think the infrastructure and the cost of making that happen again would be probably not worth it. What would you get for $5 a month?
I mean,
just the next day rights and DTC that?
Yeah, next day's Raw, SmackDowns, and NXTs.
I think they can generate demand. More money. I think they can generate more money by licensing it. Even in this increasingly challenged streaming market, I think they make more money as opposed to trying to sell this directly to consumers, right?
Yeah, because you got to staff it too, and that's costly.
Could be expense for WWE. And there's probably expense for WWE in continuing to do something with Peacock, right? But you can get more money out of an NBC Universal, an Amazon, to have them. Because they're investing in this business that isn't a mature business yet. So, I mean, most of them are not profitable. But to give it to them, and that's basically what happened with Peacock, right? Like, they're getting how much for the Peacock deal, average annual value?
It's 205.
205 is SmackDown on Fox. $200 million a year.
Yes,
just for the U.S. portion, which is about 70% of their consumption of the network content. So they're getting $200 million a year. I think they were making something around $180 million in the last years of the DTC network overall, I think. I would have to look at that. But the point is, they're definitely making more to license that out to NBC Universal, who's willing to overpay for it now because they have to build up this Peacock service now. Peacock's losing a lot of money right now, and Peacock may or may not ever be profitable. But it's such a bigger business, Comcast, NBC Universal is, than WWE, that their scale is so much bigger. You know, losing money or investing money is not as that much money is not as big of a deal to them. And maybe they end up bundling up with Paramount or Amazon or something someday. But I they just have the bigger pockets and bigger scale to afford that.
I only throw it out there because every other major sports league seems to have a big TV deal, a streaming deal, and these extra things that they provide. You know, the NFL just jumped on it, but MLB's got the MLB TV, and I'm not sure if the NBA has one and all that, but I mean, UFC has Fight Pass on top of the big ESPN Plus deal they have, you know, so.
Yeah. Given how much of that content already lives on Peacock, I would think it would.
Yeah.
It would end up going that route, but and you've got Nick Khan to make a lot of deals, and apparently he's very good at that. So anyway, that's what's happening with the Hulu. This makes a lot of sense to me. I expect that to happen in that these Hulu rights that probably don't get dealt to Hulu next year get dealt with live rights. So W raises profitability guidance. Adjusted OIBDA. What does OIBDA stand for?
It's operating income before depreciation and amortization, whatever. I can't pronounce the word.
Amortization.
Amortization, yes.
Yes, that's what it is. So, but not just OIBDA, but adjusted OIBDA, where that's their non-GAAP measure, the non-generally accepted accounting principle measure of profitability, where they get to exclude stock compensation and certain other things that they whimsically decide to exclude in any event. They'll be raising its profitability guidance, saying we're going to be a little bit more profitable than we originally told you we expected to be. From $360 million to $375 million, that range, $360 to $375, to up to $370 to $385. They also gave guidance for next quarter. This is this quarter, Q3, which runs from July 1st to September 30th. They're saying we're going to be somewhere between $70 and $80 million in adjusted OIBDA. That's smack dab. Across what my latest estimate was, which was about $76 million. So that's, W expecting to be a little bit more profitable and willing to say so. Pretty strong consumer products segment for this Q2 report, driven by WWE 2K2022, the video game, the console game, their first traditional console game since 2K2020 got terrible reviews. And venue merchandise sales were pretty strong too. In what ways were they strong? How do we know? Because they generated $8.6 million in venue merchandise. So how much is that? That's basically if I can get my laser pointer out here, that's the most that they've generated in a quarter in venue merch since 2016, where they generated $8.7 million. Why do you think it was higher this quarter, Chris Gull?
Well, WrestleMania and... Oh. I also asked this, everything purchased at Access would obviously be included in that, right?
If it was in Q2, yeah.
Yeah, because the Access Superstore, I mean, I was at it in Dallas. It was huge, and there was very expensive stuff there.
A lot of replica belts.
There was like limited edition, like Scott Hall thing that they were selling for $2,500. They were selling the Undertaker Phantom mask.
$2,500.
Yes, yeah. They were selling some Undertaker Phantom mask that was $1,000 out of $5, and that was like I think like $1,000 or $2,000. Like.
Anyway, so they did a really good Q2. Interestingly, like with 2 days of WrestleMania, this 2016. Where was WrestleMania in 2016?
Oh, see, New Orleans was 18. Was New York 16?
This is also Arlington. So this is a date on Arlington.
Okay, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, where they did a little bit more in venue merch. Maybe just more events, probably more events happening at that time that plays into that. Anyway,
yeah.
Here's the domestic venue merch per capita. Basically, this is how much venue merchandise we sold per paid ticket. And it was up to $17. In Q2, which is higher than anything in the pre-pandemic era here. Now, there's inflation involved in that too, but and there's maybe fewer house shows in this Q2 in our current Q2 here, so maybe that's affecting it still. This is pretty high, and it's higher than this return to touring quarter of Q3 of last year, where they did $14 per capita.
Why do you think Q2 21 is so high?
How many events were there in Q2 21?
So just a one event, but because it was
two days. So the 2 day WrestleMania last year, which is interesting. It gives you some insight into like what does WrestleMania do venue merch per capita. around $30. So that's it probably did something in that range.
Yeah.
Okay. Something in that ballpark.
And you only had those two events. Yeah. Right. That makes sense.
So there's that. Consumer product licensing revenue was way up. $22.6 million, which is the highest since at least 2017. Largely because of this video game, the console game, and trading cards were also mentioned. So it seems like the relationship with 2K Sports is doing better. After there's some question, there's some reporting around it that maybe, you know, if this game doesn't do well, I don't know about this relationship between Take-Two and WWE. Take-Two is the parent company of 2K Sports. But everybody seems pretty happy with how this went. It was a well-reviewed game. It sold very well, most importantly. Take-Two mentioned W2K driving sales and in their earnings report, along with a lot of other games, but mentioned it. And they announced that in their fiscal year, which ends March 31st of next year, they're going to release 2K23. 2K, yep. Right? Is that how you say it? 2K23. So the new game is going to come out by the end of March next year. So they're going to do another release here.
Which is interesting that this is a Q2 thing now, because pre-pandemic, those were always released in Q4. Ready for the holidays, November before Christmas. So it's interesting that they maybe saw the Q2 trends and they want to continue with it.
Well, if they release it by the end of March, and by the end of March, could be well before then, who knows? That would be Q1.
Okay.
Q1 is Q1. January 1st to March 31st. Oh, who knows? Who knows? We'll see here. Stephanie had some comments on the notion of a sale. That's what everybody wants to talk about. WWE's going to sell. You said it yourself, Chris Scull, about a year ago, I think. WWE's going to sell. Did it sell? Is that what she announced here on this call? It is sold.
It hasn't yet, Brandon.
To Disney.
It has not yet. WWE.
Is that true?
It is not. Apple has not bought WWE yet.
Apple is never going to buy WWE. But anyway, Stephanie McMahon took this question from Brandon Ross of Lightshed, and he didn't exactly say he was asking her about the sale, but she got it. She knew what he was getting at. She also pointed out, because Brandon Ross mentioned in his question that, you know, you took this leave of absence and then you were forced to come back. And I think she took exception to that, saying, "I took a leave of absence realizing that I needed a little bit of time with my family, given the grueling schedule." And she got about 3 weeks in, and then she came back. She wasn't forced to come back as interim CEO and chairman. She offered, so she wanted to, she says. We'll pause right there and say, I mean, just a reminder here. She takes a leave of absence on May 19th, according to the Wall Street Journal. WWE begins its investigation in April into Vince McMahon's NDAs and payments that should have been company expenses that were personal expenses, which has led to DOJ inquiries and possibly SEC inquiries. Very questionable whether or not Stephanie McMahon knew about the investigation by the board into alleged misconduct by Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis. And maybe she wanted to get out of the way of that. That would be my speculation. But she says that she just wanted to spend time with her family. And it's purely a coincidence, of course. But anyway, she's back. She's the permanent CEO, co-CEO with Nick Khan and chairwoman. And she says, now that being said, I understand your remarks. And I think I'm reading between the lines subtly. She's referring to, I believe, the notion of a sale of the company. She goes on to say, "But that being said, Vince McMahon is my father and is still very much the controlling shareholder. He is, still has eyes on what is best for our business in terms of maximizing return to our shareholders, of which he is the biggest shareholder. Nick Khan, Paul Levesque, Frank Riddick, and I remain focused on delivering the maximum results for our shareholders, so we will properly evaluate any opportunity that comes our way with that lens in mind." This clearly says what, Chris Gallo?
Clearly, this is a Vince doesn't want to sell.
You think there's meaning here?
Yeah, I think it's, hey, listen, the only person I can really tell you if we're truly going to sell is probably Vince McMahon, because he is the lead shareholder. Because he has to approve any sale, right?
I believe he would have to approve of any sale because he has about 80% of the votes. Now, that doesn't mean that WWE can't explore a sale. Ultimately, the approval of that sale will have to include Vince, as long as he is the controlling shareholder. I don't see any meaning here.
I think I will say this. I do just kind of want to touch on this topic a little bit here. Like, we don't know what Vince is doing. We haven't had anything. Like, maybe
what is he doing right now? Is he on the yacht? Is he, you know, exploring other hobbies? Is he?
So my point was going to make is he just like the most intense shareholder ever, and just looking at everything you possibly look at being a shareholder, like the access that you have to, and maybe that he's going to make that like, no, you know, I'm the shareholder. We got a profit, maximum profits for all the other shareholders, like leading the shareholders.
I mean, they have a fiduciary duty. The executives do, the remaining executives do, to deliver value to their shareholders. And they would probably be liable to a shareholder lawsuit if it could be proven that they were not upholding their fiduciary duties to, you know, if somebody offered to buy WWE if they didn't hear that out. But I don't see any meaning here. I'm sure they knew questions along these lines could be coming in the Q&A, and this is their response, and I don't see any meaning here one way or the other. It's fathomable, it's very plausible that Stephanie doesn't want to sell because this is a family company. It's been a family company since Jess, since way back in the early 20th century. And you know, and maybe, you know, if they sell to a major media company like Comcast, maybe the assurance that she will be the CEO of this company is less assured.
Yeah,
it's plausible. I have no idea, right? Who knows? So, boilerplate stuff, I think. The Peacock viewership, we got some percentage deltas for Peacock, for the WWE content on Peacock. WrestleMania, I think this was already disclosed last quarter, but WrestleMania up 60% versus the prior year. Of course, we're comparing now, finally, Peacock to Peacock here. The first event on Peacock was it WrestleMania? It might have been the pay-per-view before it, but in any event, we're comparing WrestleMania of this year to WrestleMania of last year, both of which were on Peacock, so it's more of a fair comparison. I would strongly expect, and I don't think we have data on this, but I would strongly expect that Peacock had a lot more subscribers in this year during WrestleMania versus last year during WrestleMania. Nonetheless, up 60% the viewership was. And then in May, Backlash, WrestleMania Backlash, up 49%. That's almost 50. And then in June, Hell in a Cell with Cody's torn pectoral muscle, up 45%, a little less. And then SummerSlam this year. This is in Q3, July 30th. Nonetheless, Stephanie revealed it, up 20% versus SummerSlam of last year. What do you notice about all these deltas, Chris Gullo?
They're getting smaller.
They're getting smaller. Why might they be getting smaller?
Well, I mean, probably less Peacock subscribers.
There's not less Peacock subscribers, but the growth of Peacock subscribers is not growing anymore. As of a comparison between Q2 and Q1, that's according to Comcast, right? They had 13 million subscribers in Q1, paid subscribers, 13 million in Q1, according to Comcast. How many did they have in Q2? Also 13 million. So no growth. Their monthly active accounts was very slightly down. Now, Q1 might have been extra big for them because they had the Olympics in there, they had the Super Bowl in there. We'll see what Comcast reports in the future. Maybe Q1 was an especially growthy quarter for them. Maybe they'll continue to grow, but maybe they won't. We'll see. But nonetheless, what we're seeing across the streaming ecosystem here, including Netflix, including in the HBO Discovery world, I think, too, we're seeing streaming is people who want streaming have kind of got it. And of course, there's a lot of churn because there's not that much friction associated with canceling your streaming subscription.
Has the bubble burst on streaming as far as new streaming services and these ones getting bigger? I feel like this is now, maybe we're in the era of merging, and we might start see that with Discovery and HBO Max.
We're definitely going to see that with Discovery and HBO Max come summer of next year. Those services are going to merge. WBD said so in their most recent earnings call. I think streaming is overinvested in. Somebody's going to have to figure something out here because streaming is not looking like it's going to be as profitable as cable. A lot of things need to play out to make this TV economy, whether it's streaming or traditional, to make this as profitable a business as you know, the legacy model, if you will. So that's it. WrestleMania attendance. My favorite Q2 activity happened. Every Q2, as long as WrestleMania is in Q2. Guess what we can do?
We can report the WrestleMania attendance figure that isn't the WrestleMania attendance figure.
Here's, I think these are the slides, the slide that we're looking at right now. I think I took these with my own phone of my TV, probably because there's closed captioning on, which I always have on. WrestleMania Saturday, 77,899 attendees at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas for night one, and night two, 78,453. If you round, that's about 78,000 each day. 78,000 each day. 78,000. Now, that's attendees, maybe, as Vince McMahon said, just after the last Arlington WrestleMania, where they announced 101,763 attendees at WrestleMania. He did say a couple of earnings calls later, well, that includes ushers and ticket takers and things of that nature. So what happens here? And we'll look at that slide in a second. So here's the math, if you care. What we can do, because of W's own reporting. I didn't make this up. Chris Gullo didn't make it up.
Nope.
But because of W's own reporting, each year since 2008, they've disclosed this average with WrestleMania in North America, the average without WrestleMania in North America. And then you do the math on the screen, and what you can determine is, within a range, what the WrestleMania attendance was. It was about within a range of, I believe, give or take 5,000. It's about 110,000 total over the 2 days. They announced, if you combine those 78,000 numbers, I believe that's a total of 156,000 or so paid. This is paid attendance, right? I strongly believe that these numbers that they put in this KPI slide, again, sourced from where? Chris Gull's imagination? Brandon Thurston's imagination? No, nope. No. Corporate.wwe.com. Click on investor overview. Scroll down. Look at the right. Look at that box on the middle right area of the screen. Click on key performance indicators. Turn to page 7, and you see this slide. And you do the math. And you determine that, no, in terms of paid attendance, WWE had for WrestleMania about 55,000 people. About 55,000 people, give or take a few thousand. 55,000 people each night. Again, 78,000? Wow, they must have had 22,000 comps and ushers and ticket takers and people in people's imagination.
I think they're just counting all the people that were there for WrestleMania weekend doing non-WrestleMania things.
I think they're making a number up. And I think so. And look at the gap. Did I put this in the slides? The thing that I want to look at. Yeah, look at the this is since 2008 that we've been able to do this math based on what WWE itself discloses. And this was the difference between what you can determine for the paid attendance between what they announce was the biggest in the history of our ability to do this formula since 2008. 36% increase. I think when you're in Arlington Stadium, there's pressure, although they only exaggerated by about 21% in 2016 in the same venue. But anyway, I don't know. Pretty big margin here, in other words. Yeah. Pretty big margin here compared to other WrestleManias in the last, what is that? How many years is that since 2008? 14 years?
Yeah. Do you think some of it has to do with them trying to kind of almost glorify WrestleMania because it no longer is their most profitable event? Because their most profitable event is Saudi Arabia. But because it's domestic in the U.S., they want to show, yeah, it's not as big as Saudi Arabia money wise, but it's still like so largely attended and largely.
I mean, it is Saudi Arabia probably is more profitable.
It has to be because it's
like $50 million for the event. What do you think it costs them to put on the Saudi event? Let's be aggressive and say $20 million. That's like a $30 million margin. But anyway, I think WrestleMania is still very profitable for them. If you look at the operating income, which is a measure of profitability for the live events division, which has pre-pandemic struggled to be profitable. If you look at the quarters where WrestleMania happens, which is usually Q2, and suddenly this division that struggles to be profitable is very profitable. I believe there, I have it. I can look at it right now. In fact, the operating income for this Q2 was $13.8 million. $13.8 million. Just to contrast, about a $14 million operating income profit there. Q1 without WrestleMania, of course, but still a pretty good quarter for them in terms of they do pretty well in Q1 just because it's winter and you're leading up to WrestleMania. They only made about $3 million in operating income, in profitability, if you will. Again, $3 million in Q1, January to March, $14
million
in April to June, largely driven by WrestleMania, it has to be. And they, as we just saw, they did great in venue merch as well. So it's, I mean, WrestleMania is still very, very good business for them. Not to mention they make more in the network revenue line as well, because they've got some sort of calculus with Peacock, so that the bigger the pay-per-view is, the more revenue they get in that quarter for that pay-per-view. So of course WrestleMania is the biggest and they get the biggest payoff for it.
Nick Khan mentioned the event, and I don't know if he alluded on this. He did mention the Undertaker live shows, and this might be something that WWE continues to do, live shows and all that. Would that be factored in these? Would this be a different expense, or would it be a factor like, hey, yeah, it's under the live events category?
And I guess that would be under the live events category because they sold it was a ticketed event, right?
Yeah.
I would think, like, but how many people attended that? Hundreds?
Yeah, not much, but I mean, that's a high tire ticket value. I mean, and if we've seen these things be very successful for other people in wrestling, like, of course, I think this is a business that they're going to continue to grow. It's not just going to be Undertaker. You're going to have
Triple H
learn to play the game. Yeah, like you'll just have all these stage shows and
Triple H shoots on his relationship with Vince.
But yeah, no, I'm interested to see because it's a very new business for them. It's something that's been happening in wrestling for quite a few years. Hulk Hogan was doing it in 08 with the Hulkamania and friends. But it'll be interesting to see where they report that, record that. And I'm, you know, it's not going to be huge, huge money, but it's going to be a growing business for them.
I believe it's in live events. I don't know that it's making so much revenue, though, that it even, I mean, what was the ticket price? If it was like even hundreds of dollars.
I'm sure. Like I think it was hundred. Like, yeah.
But if it was like, let's be really aggressive here. Let's say it was a $250 average ticket price times, like, let's say it was 1,000 attendees. That's $250,000. I mean, that's the difference between, you know, that's adding like a 0.3 onto their revenue. It's relatively small on their scale, but it's good business. If you can make money doing it, if you can make operating income, you make profitability doing it.
I mean, how many WrestleMania weekends have they seen other people capitalize and do that? And they're like, that's
their StarCast, right?
Yeah.
This is probably in react. Wasn't Undertaker going to do StarCast? And they said, wait a minute.
Well, he was going to do StarCast a few years ago.
Right. And that's what I meant. Yeah.
I mean, that was their counter event, I think. I think it was the same night as the Ric Flair roast, if I'm not mistaken. And I think it was their counter event.
These were, by the way, the WrestleTix numbers, which were about 66,000 tickets distributed that WrestleTix could find on the map. So then that's what I believe to be number of people in the building, probably about 66,000. Yeah. And about 55,000 of those, give or take 1,000, paid. But WrestleMania this year, tickets already are next year. I keep saying this year, but next year. In L.A., in Inglewood, actually, tickets already on sale. Triple H broke the news right on the earnings call, and then they immediately sent out a press release during the earnings call saying, Dateline, Stanford, we've sold 90,000 tickets already to the two-day WrestleMania next year. That is the most tickets we've ever sold in the first 24 hours. Unclear if they mean the first 24 hours, including the pre-sale time or the general on-sale time, in any event. They say that that's a 42% increase over first-day sales for WrestleMania last year. I know Lightshed was talking on their podcast about how high the ticket prices were because we've seen some floor seats priced at like $5,000. I saw a screenshot, $10,000 for a floor seat for WrestleMania. I did ask Mr. WrestleTix, though, is this out of the norm? Is this more than last year? It's a really high ticket price, but I think it's on par with what they were doing last year. I don't know if this is a significant increase in any case. Actually, by the way, I don't know what WrestleMania last year did for a gate. Combined, I mean, I'm sure it did more than the $17.3 million that is the the record up to that point for WrestleMania, which was the 2016 WrestleMania, $17.3 million in the gate. I'm sure the two-day WrestleMania for 2022 was higher than that, but that's two events. Anyway. WrestleTix, 90,000 paid. Is that a real number? 90,000 tickets sold? The WrestleTix numbers would support that. WrestleTix is counting 98,000 tickets distributed. So surely some of those are comps, but, you know, 8,000 of them perhaps being comps, that sounds realistic to me out of 90,000. So WrestleTix definitely supports this idea that WWE has sold 90,000 tickets to WrestleMania already. So that's what per day, or we got tickets distributed of about 49,000 out each day as of, this was the 15th, which was what day of the week? Last week, Monday. So yeah, the day before the earnings call, where they published this, where they published that, you know, where am I here? Oh, where they published 90,000. Anyway, finally, are we an hour in here? No. 47 not minutes. Yet. WWE raised its blackout, prohibiting all employees from trading stock, which they started on July 22nd, the day that Vince McMahon announced his retirement. WWE sent out a message to all staff saying you can't trade stock anymore till further notice. They lifted that, I believe, on Thursday. There's a report about that for subscribers. Stock continues to climb. I mean, we're looking at this now year to date. It's up 42% year to date. 42%. The stock is, as of the close of the market on Friday, $71. $71 per share. That is a market capital of about $5.3 billion. So that is the value of all of the shares combined. Gives you an idea of what WWE would sell for, I would say on the low end. To truly buy WWE, probably going to cost you a lot more than $5.3 billion. So and by the way, this is, of course, continuing to outperform me in year-to-date anyway. It's outperforming the indexes, which are year-to-date in the negative. In the stock market overall, this since June, I would say, and certainly throughout July, a little bit of a recovery in the stock market in general. As recession, everyone's talking about recession. The stock market is not the economy, but stock market doing better in the last month or so. So anyway, that's it for earnings.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
But if you have any questions on that or anything else that we'll cover the rest of the episode, don't be afraid. Make a super chat. You know, any dollar amount, I think it starts at a dollar, but any dollar amount is accepted. But we want to see your questions, and for a very small super chat, we would appreciate it if you guys put your super chats in.
Okay. And then on the 17th, Wednesday, this past Wednesday, Wall Street Journal had a report. What did they say? What did they report, Chris Call? What did they report?
They reported that WWE's board found Vince McMahon paid $5 million to Donald Trump's charity, something we discussed in detail last week.
Yes, if you listened to this program last week or read my article last week, you knew this already. You knew this was, well, we didn't report it as fact because I cannot prove it as fact, but you knew this was coming.
That's normally me that makes the big loud noise.
I just spilled some coffee. But anyway, as my hubris was looming here. But based on WWE's disclosure that Vince McMahon paid a total of $5 million to somebody in 2007 and then a second payment in 2009, it was all but certain, very likely, that it was Donald Trump. And Wall Street Journal was able to actually confirm that. So they say things like this. People familiar with the board investigation said that the $5 million payment represented charitable donations to the now dissolved Donald J. Trump Foundation in the same 2 years that the then real estate developer made appearances at WWE televised events. An attorney for WWE said that the payments to Mr. Trump should have been booked as business expenses because Mr. McMahon was a principal shareholder and the payments benefited the company. The attorney declined to say why the payments benefited WWE. Was this me interjecting now? Was WWE, was Donald Trump more incentivized? Was this sort of an implied payment for his appearances in 2007 at WrestleMania and around WrestleMania and in his 2009 appearances on Raw, where he purchased Raw and then sold it back in storyline to Vince at a profit? Mr. Trump had his associates review the contract from 2007 to ensure that under no circumstances would Mr. McMahon be allowed to shave Donald Trump's head, even if Mr. Trump's wrestler, Bobby Lashley, dropped dead in the ring, a person said. The person familiar with the contract said. So Donald Trump, foreseeing a double cross here, and said, I know what happened in Montreal in 1997, Vince. It's not going to happen to me. People are saying that you might screw me. So Donald Trump not allowing himself to be to have his head shaved. Let's see here. I think there was also WWE confirmed this. After the event, he boasted his appearance had been such a success that Mr. McMahon agreed to pay him an additional $1 million. The person said, an attorney for WWE did not dispute the contributions were related to Mr. Trump's appearances, but challenged the notion that the $1 million was a bonus for the success of the event. Now, this is a quote from Jerry McDivitt in email to the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Trump and WWE entered into a contract whereby WWE agreed to pay him personally an appearance fee of $1 million. Jerry McDivitt, the attorney, said in an email. At the same time, the McMahons made a personal contribution to the foundation of $4 million. There was no additional fee paid to Mr. Trump or any additional contribution to the Trump Foundation due to the success of the event. So it seems that they're referring to the 2007 appearance and payment.
Do we know no money of 09 then?
Read on. Mr. Trump received a $100,000 fee for his appearance on WWE Raw in 2009, while at the same time, quote unquote, Mr. McMahon and his wife made a $1 million donation to Mr. Trump, to the Mr. Trump Foundation that year, McDivitt said. So I guess what McDivitt is saying here, for WrestleMania in 2007, hair versus hair, he was paid $1 million. At the same time, the McMahons made personal contributions of $4 million. So $1 million to him personally as an appearance fee, McDivitt says. And then for some reason, which we can debate, I suppose, they made a $4 million contribution, which is what's in the IRS filings.
Yeah.
And then they're saying in 2009, he was paid an appearance fee of $100,000 for the Raw appearances. I believe one was on video and then one was in person. While at the same time, Mr. McMahon and his wife Linda made a $1 million contribution.
Yeah, because I was going to say $100,000 sounds light for him at that point, because that was, at that point, The Apprentice was huge.
So that's what we know. So I'm glad the Wall Street Journal was able to confirm that. Maybe we were discussing last week whether or not we would ever find out, and I was saying something about, well, maybe if they disclose the actual documentation of their investigation, maybe we'll find out. I now doubt that we're going to see any documentation from their investigation. By the way, analysts could have asked some questions, not just about the investigation, but just about the future of the company and a little bit more about how Vince's exit changes things, and maybe a little bit more about the notion of a sale and who exactly is taking over what duties for Vince, to what extent. Let's follow up on what Stephanie just said about a little bit of a hold on ads and sponsorships. Can you reassure us that the scandal here is not going to impact business? Maybe some things of that nature. Nobody mentioned Vince's name among the analysts. Stephanie mentioned him, unprompted, although she did mention him in one of her, in her response to Brandon Ross. Anyway, moving on. The G1 climax ended with Okada, Kazuchika Okada and Will Ospreay in the final. So from day one on through the final, Chris, go take us through. I know you have star ratings ready.
Well, I'll keep it short and sweet here. Okada winning his
watching every night
second
GPW World.
Okada winning his second in a row climax. Is this number four? Right,
I believe this is number four. He's now tied with Chono.
Yeah,
tied with Masahiro Chono.
But I think the bigger question is, Brandon, is New Japan Pro Wrestling creating new stars? I think, and that might actually, I joke, but that might actually have to be a serious conversation.
I don't know. What I do have prepared to look at here is the attendance. So WWE, New Japan does publish their attendances, at least almost all of their Japanese attendances, on their website. And they have, we believe, so our belief is that, and I believe this is consistent with something that Takaki Kidani, who's the CEO of Bushiroad, has said, or the chairman, if I forget exactly what his title is. But so New Japan attendances, we believe, since April 29th, 2015, we believe these attendances are, I believe they are reflective of total attendance, including comps. So not reflective of paid attendance. I believe that based on looking at Bushiroad filings and the Bushiroad disclosures about New Japan's attendance being a little bit lower than what I calculate out for what they've reported on the website. So anyway, I think this includes comps. In any case, assuming that the comping has been consistent over time, we can get an impression of what attendance has been like over these years for the G1 Climax. So G1 Climax has been between 18 and 20 events. They did 20, which is one more than they usually do in this year. And the total attendance was about 48,000. Now remember, in Japan, there are still restrictions in terms of there's no cheering still. No cheering in Japan still. Clapping only. I believe they're doing some shows upcoming where you can cheer, but then it's still got to be spaced out. In any case, this was about half. This total attendance was about half of what they did in 2019, which was the last pre-pandemic. It's just over half in 2018. In 2018, they did about 91,000. In 2019, they went down a little bit to 85,000. And this year, doing 48,000 in total attendance, an average of about 2,400. So that would be lower than really anything WWE does. Anything that AEW does, it'd be lower than probably an average house show. The highest was a 67,000, which is probably, I don't know, but it was probably one of the Budokan nights. The lowest was a 1,128 attendance. So anyway, New Japan's attendance is way down. Now, why? Is it the product? I would think some of this, at least, it could be the product and just the product being less hot, but some of this, at least, I think we have to attribute to the pandemic. Now, I think I've asked people who know more about Japanese wrestling scene and what's happening in Japan, who know more than I do about that. And I've asked, is capacity, are we at full capacity for all these events? And it depends on the venue and the municipality. So it's all different. But I would think that there's probably still some hesitancy just in terms of, like, do I feel safe going into a large gathering here at this point? And I think there's some hesitancy about, do I want to go to an event where I can only clap? That might not be as much fun.
Did Wrestle Kingdom have full capacity earlier this year?
I don't think so.
I would imagine 2023 probably will.
So Wrestle Kingdom last year was two events.
Yes. Well, didn't they have, like, the third event, too, like, randomly later, too?
I believe that's the Noah and New Japan show.
Yeah.
But Wrestle Kingdom this year, thank God, will be one event. One event for Wrestle Kingdom. So, anyway, that's what's happening here. When will people be allowed to cheer and attend in full capacity in Japan? I have no idea. Did you watch any of this New Japan?
I have not.
When's the last time you watched New Japan?
Oh!
Admit it.
Honestly, probably 2019 before the pandemic, I guess. Yeah. I'll admit it. I mean, I've seen clips and stuff and all that. And
You look at the GIFs online. Oh, you can't look at the GIFs online. DiBiase, he says, hell no. Take them down. I did turn on the final. I watched bits of the final. And I listened to a lot of people talk about it. That's how I followed the Jew on this year. So, anyway, match quality. So I looked at Cage Match. I thought this was interesting. I looked at Cage Match. And I said, give me the top 10 matches on Cage Match in terms of the match ratings, the voters vote on it on a 10-point scale. And I said, give me the G1, each year of the G1 since 2013, which I think to be about the beginning of this glory era of New Japan, 2013. Give me the top 10. Give me the top 10 matches from the G1 based on those match ratings. And let's look at it over time. And I think this is consistent with my intuition, is that in 2013, it starts getting better and better and better and better and better. And then it peaks in 2019. And then in 2020, now we're into the COVID era, it gets lower. And 2021 and 2022 were about on par with each other, although the final had a very high rating for this year between Okada and Ospreay. But, I think this is reflective of... I like to think and talk a lot about All Japan in the 90s, and I think, you know, in the same breath, we should talk about New Japan in the 2010s, you know. And you can see here, at least with an impression from the G1 climax, where this peaks at the very end of that decade, and you know, COVID has really compromised their creative output and their business clearly. Just the lack of cheering is tough for them, but you know, I'm not going to blame anybody for being more safe rather than less safe. Maybe if the rest of the world had been as cautious as Japan, maybe we would have cheering in Japan again by now. But anyway,
but I mean, to my point earlier, you know, the stars on top now were the same stars on top a few years ago. We've had Shingo had a little bit of a run there, and he came out of left field, but other than that,
they elevated Ibushi. Now Ibushi is on the outs.
So, but it's been your typical your Okadas, your Naitos,
they lost Kenny Omega, which is a big loss, especially in the mindset of a global international strategy. You had a bilingual top star there.
Yeah, I mean, I think
fan of the Great Okan or Evil.
I honestly thought Sonata would have been a bigger star by now. There, I really thought he would have been elevated. I thought he was the next great one, and I guess I was wrong. But
well, I'm not going to analyze New Japan after we both just admitted to almost never watch.
Yeah.
So anyway, is that all I have for New Japan? Well, we've got some Google Trends. So let's look at the Google Trends for Japan, and we can see, you know, we've got this dotted line here, which is the current week. These are weekly data points that we're looking at here, but we can see back in the years of 2018. It was at its highest point in this picture, in this five-year picture. That's what this is. It's a five-year picture for just Japan, so just their domestic market. And it's a little bit lower in 2019, consistent with attendance. And it's a little bit lower in 2020, which is now the COVID era. And then it's a little bit lower in 2021. And maybe we're going to end up a little bit lower for this year. But we'll see. We'll see how that ends up in a few days. Probably we'll be able to view that on a worldwide basis. Similar story. Maybe this year and last year are a little bit more equal, but declining, right? U.S., if we want to look at the biggest English-speaking market here, similar trends here. Getting a little bit lower and maybe a little bit more equal when it comes to this year and last year. So just it affirms something that I think is that, you know, just New Japan's, the interest in New Japan, especially internationally, has declined in recent years and has definitely declined coinciding with COVID. So there's that. NXT UK. How's NXT UK doing? You've been watching that? How's that?
Well, they canceled their last set of TV tapings, and that's where people thought was the sign. And then on Tuesday, I'm sorry, a bunch of NXT UK stars showed up on NXT. And then we get this news this week. I think Thursday did it break? Or Thursday, right? Thursday or Friday, I can't remember.
That sounds about right. NXT UK is going to be relaunched as NXT Europe. We're not getting rid of people. It's a reorganization. We're reimagining it. Okay. NXT Europe is going to relaunch and be reimagined in next year. So shortly after this announcement, which, by the way, I understand, I think PW Insider has reported that this is not a new position for him, a new title for him, but he's had it for a couple of years, but this is the first time I saw any public trace of it, that Shawn Michaels is the vice president of talent creative development, creative talent development or something like that. Something that doesn't quite make grammatical sense, but nonetheless, he is a vice president Shawn Michaels.
I wonder if it's a lot like, so in sports, the assistant GM in the NHL is really the GM of the AHL team. And it's one of it's like, cause he's the head of creative of NXT now, it seems to be. So that's why he's the vice president of all creative.
Yeah. So we need to remind people that it was in 2018 at the Business Partner Summit, Paul Levesque walked out on the stage and said, here's the map. I'm going to make a global territory system because, you know, We've gone global, and now all the territories are gone. We have no place to get talent from. No place. There's nowhere that talent comes from now, except for unless we make performance centers all over the world. And then in January, I believe it was 2018. Is that correct? January 2018, for no reason other than to develop talent, we decided to launch an NXT UK, a performance center in the UK, for no reason other than there's no talent out there. And they did. And now NXT, you know, it's they're just going to make it even bigger and better because it's going to be Europe now, correct?
Well, no, and I think, you know, we don't have any slides for it, but I think it has to be said that there was a lot of releases that came out, highlighted by, I think, Trent Seven, Zaya Brookside, Mark Andrews, / Morgan Webster.
Yes.
Some pretty prominent stars in the United Kingdom. And
it sounds like if you're not being brought over to NXT, and by the way, they confirmed that there's going to be the PLE on September 4th in the afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern start time. So the day after the Cardiff show in the UK, which is like a 3 p.m. start time, they're going to do it on a Sunday, 4 p.m. start time. The Worlds Collide premium live event for just NXT. So not going head to head with all out. But it sounds like if you're not, you know, they brought over some people like Tyler Bate, but if you're not part of that crew. You know, some 20 wrestlers sound like they have parted ways with WWE.
And it seemed, I mean, the UK indie scene was pretty depleted after this happened. So it'll be interesting to see how that grows. I had a question. Do you know the much about the TV deal out there with BT Sport and all that? Like, and wasn't there some conflict of interest of because that's why AEW couldn't get on BT Sport because they have the NXT UK television? If I remember that correctly. Well,
AEW is on ITV.
Yes.
In the UK. It looks like Dynamite might be more viewed than either Raw or SmackDown. I would have to double check on that. And our UK friends will tell us if we're wrong.
Yeah. And that's why I bring it out there. I want to be corrected.
So WWE is on television in the UK on BT Sport and on Channel 5, which is higher reach, the latter. They got, so it looks like Morgan Stanley believes, and I know Sport Business had an article way, way back that's behind a paywall and I never really got to see it, but it looks like they got a downgrade in their TV deal in the last round. So the round that began paying them in 2020 when they moved off of Sky and onto BT Sports / Channel 5, they got a downgrade in their TV deal. I don't know what else you want to know. They were taping TV post-pandemic or during pandemic, whatever, in the BT Sports studio.
And my question for that NXT, is did that NXT probably UK. Keep NXT UK probably profitable? Because we thought it was going to go under in the pandemic when all these releases happened.
Profitable in context.
Maybe not profitable. It kept it afloat. Like, they had to honor it. Maybe they didn't shut it down. They shut it down now instead of shutting it down a year ago or 2 years ago because they had to honor that TV deal with BT Sport.
Could be. I don't know. You know, it would be interesting to look at when did they start taping there and does that line up in the calendar with when they're stopping taping there? That could be. But I don't, it would take me a minute to look that up. But it was all worth it because at least World Sport doesn't exist. Which is what I was snidely alluding to. So World of Sport was going to be this new TV show, I believe on ITV, that was, you know, a reprisal of the great World of Sport from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Some of the best wrestling you'll find, in my opinion. This is why they brought back Johnny Saint and stuff. But anyway, there's going to be a new, you know, at this time, you know, the indies were great in the UK. There's a lot of positive momentum around the UK indie scene. Progress, ICW, wow. And World of Sport was coming up, and they were going to do it. They were going to get a TV deal on IWTV, and whoa. WWE said, I don't think so. And they launched the NXT UK brand and signed up a lot of talent. So at least there wasn't a World of Sport competitor out there. So anyway.
Triple H watch.
Speaking of Triple H's endeavors, what's the latest with Triple H here? Triple H is now the head of creative. He's been the head of creative. Vince McMahon is no longer the head of creative. I feel like I'm in a dream here. Since July 29th or so. TV ratings? Is there anything we can read out of TV ratings here? I think not really. The SmackDown was partially preempted in many markets last Friday. It was partially preempted in a few markets this past Friday. So SmackDown's a little bit compromised, but I would say, if nothing else, we can say, well, the ratings are holding up just fine. The ratings are doing okay in terms of Raw and SmackDown. Even NXT did a really good rating for NXT with the Heatwave special episode of NXT this past Tuesday. Did their best total viewership, I believe, since the Halloween Havoc episode. It's way back in October, almost a year ago. And we can see that the demo suffered on SmackDown in this partial preempted episode two Fridays ago. But you know, I could say that maybe if you look at the demo, you know, this is doing pretty well. These two, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see these two episodes of Raw that were approaching, you know, 700,000 viewers in the demo. These were the episodes, I believe, surrounding, well, this is just before July. These are the episodes surrounding, you know, Vince McMahon, the scandal surrounding Vince McMahon, the original reports in June from the Wall Street Journal, where they did some good ratings, just because I think people had WWE top of mind. Anyway, the Raw ratings have been on par with back then, and have been doing better than these episodes back here in the demo. So, I don't know. I would wait a little bit longer before trying to make some conclusions here. And really, you know, viewership numbers are very misleading anyway. And I would look more so. Here's, you want a straightforward look at how these TV shows are doing. Look at this chart. Look at this chart. I've debated. You know, these tweets that I put out every day. And WWE Raw last night on the USA Network from 8 to 11 had this many viewers and did this demo. I've debated, and then I put the line chart in there. I've debated leading with this chart. Because this is the chart that really tells you the story.
Yeah.
You don't have to decode.
You know, topsy-turvy, it's consistency.
And, you know, TV is a declining metric, you know, and what does it really mean? That you know, the TV, it was down, and it's down from last year, but what does that really mean? Anyway, if we look at all the cable originals, all the broadcast primetime, that is all the data that we get from Showbiz Daily on a daily basis, how did SmackDown do? SmackDown has been number one for 5 weeks in a row. We'll see what it does on when it reports this coming Monday for what it did on Friday. Raw has been number two for 4 weeks in a row. That will be changing soon when the NFL starts up again in September. But Raw and SmackDown are holding up pretty well in terms of their ranking. I mean, more than pretty well. They're holding just fine here in this yellow outlined Triple H era. Now, how do people feel? What is the sentiment out there? I put out this poll, which I understand got a very strong reaction. I asked, since Paul Levesque took over creative in late July, have main roster WWE programs gotten better? These are the four options. Twitter only lets you do four options. Number one, it's about the same. Number two, at least somewhat better. Number three, at least somewhat worse. Or number four, I just haven't really watched, so I can't vote. And basically we got just over 1% of people saying it got somewhat worse. We got 7% of the people saying it's the same. And 78%, a super majority, saying it's at least somewhat better. At least somewhat better. So maybe you think it's way better.
I voted.
At least somewhat better. You voted. What did you vote for?
I voted at least somewhat better.
Have you been watching?
I'll be honest. I haven't watched a lot of SmackDown, but I've watched a lot of Raw. Friday nights, I'm usually out of the house and something's going on. But Monday nights, I seem to be like, yeah, I need someone to watch on TV, and I've been watching Raw since Triple H took over, and it's more enjoyable television. Is it historically good? And I'm, oh, I remember that Raw episode. No, but I enjoy it. It's appeasing more to my taste in wrestling.
So, for what this is worth, these are my, as a lot of these people are not my followers, I'm sure, who are voting in this, based on how people reacted to this tweet poll. But anyway, we got 6,490 votes as of a little while ago, is when I took the screenshot. So for what that's worth, a lot of people on Twitter think it's at least somewhat better now. How about cage match? We've got the cage match voters, which is like, we're continuing to get about 100 voters for Raw. They're getting 70, 50 voters for SmackDown, but they're continuing to rate these episodes generally more highly than the episodes before Paul Levesque takes over. This Raw, in fact, got an 8.4, which is, wow. So I'm looking at everything since year to date. Yes. And 8.4 for this past Monday's Raw, at least when I took this screenshot last night. Do we even have an 8 on the screen? Do we even have a 7 on the screen in the Vince era year to date? We don't. There's no 7 here. Nope. I could round up and get to a 7 with this, 6.85, 6.7, but there's nothing that's a 7.0 or greater. Everything in the Triple H era for Raw is a 7.0. There's only 4. Okay, everything. There's 4 weeks. 7.0 or greater. This past Monday was the highest yet. 8.4. For what that's worth. Now, I think that, what does that really mean? Now, we can say, you had people in cage match. This is just a vote minority who don't really matter. That's what Vince would say, right? But, I mean, you've got at least, you don't even need to consider their opinion absolutely, but you consider the difference in their opinion, right? It goes from lower to higher, okay? What does SmackDown do? SmackDown has gone from lower in the Vince era, higher in the Triple H era. Okay, again, not a massive sample here, right? We're dealing with between 52 and 71 voters here. Wish it was bigger. If you know somewhere where there's a larger sample, let me know, and I'll look at it. But we're in, this second SmackDown, the Triple H era, only did a 6.3. Even that 6.3 is better than most of the SmackDowns in the Vince era in 2022. And everything else is, over a 7.3 or better. And that's better than almost all of these SmackDowns, with the exception of this June 10th SmackDown, which got a 7.7, which I believe you mentioned last week. Conclusion here, cage match voters think that this era so far is decidedly better. There's coincidentally more wrestling on this show too. Almost every episode of Raw and almost every episode of SmackDown since Triple H took over have more minutes of wrestling than the other episodes, at least since WrestleMania. More wrestling. That's weird. Wrestling's so dumb. I wish we could just get rid of the ring and the wrestlers. Make it entertainment.
Just all promos.
But anyway, that's that. That's the Triple H watch for the week. Moving on. Big Ten. You're going to tell us about the Big Ten. $1
billion. $1 billion a year.
A year. Man, average.
A year. Average, yeah. At the minimum, this deal will make $7 million. Reading on it, it can make up to, $7 billion. Reading on it, it can make up to $10 billion. I think that might have to do with even further expansion.
How many years is this deal?
7 years. And all the networks got involved. Fox, CBS, NBC all got involved, which also includes Peacock and FS1.
No ESPN.
No ESPN. No ESPN or ABC will not be part of this. They have been, though,
up until now, though, right?
Yes. They, though, are going to host the top SEC football game starting 2024. And I think, this isn't a college football podcast.
By the way, this deal goes into effect next year, correct?
Yes.
So ESPN is still going to have Big Ten this year.
This year, yes. This is for the 23-24 season.
What colleges are in the Big Ten? Just name a couple.
You got your Michigans, your Ohio States, your Nebraskas, and now you got your UCLAs USCs. The Ohio State. You got your Purdue's and your Illinois and your Northwesterns, and the sources say, from reading in New York Times, that they are not done expanding, that they're going to continue to expand more teams. The the general belief in college football experts, and I listen to a lot of this, is that we're going to end up with three conferences when it's all said and done. The Big Ten, the SEC, and everybody else. Everybody else, all the mid-majors will be in like one super mid-major.
So what's ESPN going to do? Are they going to do a deal with the ACC?
Well, they have SEC rights now.
Yes.
Like,
but they already had SEC.
Yes,
correct?
Yeah. But
it's,
I think
not new.
Maybe they try to get all the SEC rights when they go up. The problem with the ACC contract is they have that, but that's going until the 2030s. ACC kind of screwed themselves.
So they already have ACC locked up.
Yes, yes.
Okay. When does SEC come up? Nick Khan made that deal.
Yeah, that's a good question. SEC, I don't know. I do know the Pac-12 is coming up, but what's left of the Pac-12? The future on that is very uncertain. Deal, some SEC tickets deal. Let's see here. They may have. Okay, so this was a fairly new deal that starts in 2024, where ABC ESPN will get majority rights to the marquee games. So they have a new deal that starts in effect 2024. Yes, yeah, and that is going to be $3 billion.
So what's bit bigger? What's a bigger deal at this point, Big Ten or the SEC?
I mean, who
are the bigger names? Who in terms of the teams that they have? Is that up for debate?
It's up for debate because you basically Alabama and Ohio State are your probably two most famous college football teams, and Alabama's in the SEC and Ohio State. But Alabama, I mean, SEC also just got Texas.
So this is not like AFC NFC in terms of just the name value.
The thing is, so it's a power move, right? So the SEC adds Texas and Oklahoma. So the Big Ten goes and adds UCLA and USC.
Okay.
It's a power move. But yeah, it looks like this is a 10-year deal, which they're going to get about $300 million a year. So that is not that
who's
profitable
who's
for them. SEC.
Okay.
So they're probably, after seeing this, they are probably definitely kicking themselves.
So Big Ten, not going to ESPN. Obviously, it's going, let's just put it back on the screen here. It's going to CBS, also known as Paramount, formerly known as Viacom. It's going to Fox, and it's going to NBC, including Peacock. Fox, including FS1, and Fox Broadcast, right? So, I know there's probably some streaming here that we're not going to unpack. And there's Big Ten Network as well. It's not leaving
that out.
But anyway.
Which is part of Fox. Fox is the backer for that.
So, in 2024... there's going to be some programming space that's going to be not occupied by the Big Ten for ESPN.
Yes. But that's where they'll probably fill it in. They're going to have the 2024. They get more marquee games of the SEC. CBS got the majority of the marquee games in the old SEC TV.
This includes basketball too, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Which, I mean, basketball, it's profitable, but I mean, the NCAA tournament for CBS is probably what really...
The tournament is a different thing. This would be regular season.
Yeah, regular season. Conference games, yeah.
Yeah.
So those games, those slots are going to be filled by SEC games, where CBS used to have SEC marquee games.
So... I guess does this mean anything for wrestling in terms of where I'm seeing if we can steer this, and maybe we just can't, is that does ESPN not having as much college football, which maybe they have just as much or more, does that make ESPN any more of a suitor for WWE or AEW? And I'm thinking it's not going to be the mothership. Let's not dilute.
Well, that's the thing.
Let's not make people say that Russell Alex was talking about WWE or AEW going on ESPN linear. ESPN2
and ESPN Plus would be, but you know, we talk about reach and like, does Tony Khan or WWE, we want to do that? Because that does decrease the reach.
ESPN2 is in just as many homes as ESPN, the mothership is.
But it's just not as popular. Like, people don't talk about ESPN2.
Very true. But if David Zaslav is like, hey, I'm just like Jamie Kellner, I hate wrestling, and you got to go somewhere.
Paramount. We don't talk about Paramount enough.
And No, remember, I got to remind people every time we bring up other potential suitors for wrestling rights. It's not just about whether or not you're going to go there. It's about whether or not they're going to make an aggressive bid that encourages others to make more aggressive bids.
But I think, I don't know, Paramount's the one major one that doesn't have anything to do with wrestling right now. And
And then they don't have any more great reach platforms, you know, than ESPN2 is. It's very comparable, right? If we were talking about, like, I don't know, the Paramount TV network or...
Maybe
or
we see MTV. AEW on MTV, yeah.
Yeah. Frisco is on the MTV train.
Yeah, I think they should do MTV over Paramount. That's just my opinion, but...
We'll see. We'll see. 2.3x increase for the Big Ten in their average annual value. 2.3x. How does that compare? How does that stack up to everybody else right now? We've got Formula One just came in with a much lower deal, going to a much higher deal. 16.5x upgrade for Formula One. I took the median of what the range is that's been reported by, I believe, Sports Business Journal. Or maybe it was Deadline. Anyway. But everybody's, it seems like, you know, the higher, the bigger your deal is, the smaller your upgrade is, with the exception of the MLB. Maybe, and I have no idea, but maybe part of the issue with the MLB most recent deal is that, and I know some of it was for more games, but maybe the aging of the audience or something. But in any case, they still got a 10% upgrade. NFL's most recent deal, they only got a 50% upgrade, but nonetheless, they went from $7 billion to $10.2 billion. So anyway, everybody's continuing to get an upgrade. How does this compare to the most recent deals? Again, Formula One got a 16.5x upgrade. Before that, Premier League got a 2.7x upgrade. Who's before that? The NHL got tripled. The NHL got tripled. What's next? Who's next up? Who's next up?
I mean, AEW would be next up, right? Because MLS just made their deal.
Should have MLS on here. What did MLS do?
It did get an increase. I don't think it was as much as they wanted, but yeah, MLS just did their deal. So I'm trying to think of the next big deal up.
I don't think there's a bigger deal on the horizon in terms of AAV than WWE.
Yeah. I mean, we got Pac-12 football, but we don't know what the Pac-12 future is. I mean, they took out the two teams from Los Angeles, so but that's the next college football deal.
Okay. We'll see. Your move, David Zaslav. We'll see what happens. Stelter from CNN got dropped. Sesame Street. Some episodes of Sesame Street got cut
out of there.
HBO Max. Hope you watched all your old Sesame Street episodes, because they're gone now. What's next? You know what they're going to cut next, don't you? You know what they're going to cut next? Dave Zaslav, he's got the knife out. He's getting ready. He's getting ready.
I can't see AEW being canceled. Them going back there, I don't know. But I think this, if anything, this tells you that there will be no Ring of Honor on HBO Max or Discovery Plus.
Who knows? No, AEW, I don't know that would be legal. I don't know if their contract precludes that.
Yeah.
I highly, highly doubt that AEW is going to be canceled before their deal is up. Anyway, I would more so believe that they've already had their option renewed, because that is an option that is to the network. Anyway, that's all we got for this week. Thumbs up, share, and subscribe. Help people find this. If more people have been listening last week, they would have already known what the Wall Street Journal was going to report. They already know that information. You got a shirt to sell?
Yeah, they finally did it, and my pro wrestling tee store was accepted. So we threw a design on there, the Bowtie Mafia. It's in honor of some of the people who listen to our show that say they're members of the Bowtie Mafia. So thank you guys.
Really? Oh, wow.
And you can get that shirt at prowrestlingtees.com/Chris Gillo. And then, of course, Rediscovering Indies, you can check on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. We got Dragon Gate Part 2 coming out this – Dragon Gate USA Part 2 coming out this month here. And then, of course, Chris Gillo at Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Check me out, my wrestling appearances and comedy appearances. And who knows what else I'm getting into.
And on patreon.com/WrestleNomics, This past week, we had a report on W employees being allowed to trade shares again. We had key takeaways. All this stuff was just for subscribers. Key takeaways from the W earnings call. Just $5 a month. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. And in addition to the TV ratings reports that come out nearly every day, in addition to the spreadsheet, the massive spreadsheet of all the TV ratings going back to late 2014. And who's a draw every month. The slides to all the podcasts we do, including this one. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics. That's it. Our WrestleNomics contributors, Jason Umpster, who helped me with the quarter hours. Oh, yes, quarter hours. You want quarter hours? They're out there for subscribers right now for everything from late last month through this past Thursday. Quarter hours are out there, which Jason helped me produce. Other contributors include Chris Ely, Jesse Collings. Jesse was invited to come on the show, but he was out of town, unavailable. Well, I'm sure we'll have him on again in the future. Our technical consultant who continues to manage our ratings game to predict the Dynamite demo is Phil Chertok. Thanks, as always, to John Pollock and Waiting of Post Wrestling, to Corey Gibson, to Showbiz Daily, to WrestleTix. Chris Harrington created WrestleNomics some years ago, and WrestleNomics is distributed in cooperation with Post Wrestling and supported by listeners and viewers like you.